you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Alice Bradley, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Jordan Calhoun, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we are learning how to better care for our skin.
And it's a little counterintuitive. As it turns out, the right answer might not be so much soap.
You might just be scrubbing off bacteria that might actually be helping your skin.
And here to help explain our skin microbiomes is journalist and physician James Hamblin.
We have trillions of microbes living all over us, similar to how we have them in our guts. And they're not causing problems. It is an ecosystem that is essentially part of who we are.
James is a board-certified physician, public health expert, and a staff writer at The Atlantic. James has written extensively on the topic of health, including in his first book, If Our Bodies Could Talk, A Guide to Operating and Maintaining the Human Body.
James's most recent book is called Clean, The New Science of Skin, which explores everything from the emerging science of the skin microbiome to the lies we're told by the skincare companies.
Jordan, as I'm sure our Lifehacker video viewers have seen, you are always glowing in Hacker Whack videos. What's your skincare routine?
Oh man, I am a sucker for all natural skin products. Let me tell you, I spend money on, well, not ridiculous amounts of money because I'm also cheap. So I balance my my frugality with my need for things that just say all natural on it. Do I actually read the label? Do I know if they're all natural? Would I understand if it were really natural? No, I'm a fool. But if it says it on the package on the outside, like 99.9% pure or whatever, like I'll use like Ivory soap, and I'll use Neutrogena's like clear and natural whatever version of their face wash. I use Burt's Bees like all natural night cream with royal jelly from bees or something like that. It's probably all chemicals and lies, but that's what I use, and it sort of makes me feel like I'm at least not putting crazy chemicals on my face. But I really don't know. I feel like if there's someone who would fall into the lies of big skin companies, big skin, I feel like it would be me. I would be that sucker. So I don't know. Hopefully we're going to learn a little bit more about that. What about you? What do you do to maintain that nice, that beautiful glow?
I have come around to the use of oils on my skin. I don't use soap on
really?
My skin. I am all in on big oil.
Wait.
Not the right term.
What oils? Like, are these essential oils? I know nothing about essential oils or anything.
So
like
no,
that.
I started doing the oil cleansing method a few years ago, which is just like instead of using soap, you use a mix of castor oil and another oil that doesn't irritate your skin. So like I tried olive oil, that didn't work.
Uh-huh.
I ended up using, I can't remember what the oil is. I had this mix for so long that I can't remember what it is. It's jojoba. Jojoba and castor oil. And you put it on your face, use a washcloth to kind of remove it, and then you kind of rinse the washcloth with hot water and you do it again until your face feels relatively clean. And that's it.
Nice.
That's
I've seen that oil before in hair care products that I put in my locks. And again, I am a fool. So when I see it, I'm just like, what is it? Jojoba? Okay, jojoba oil. This seems fine.
Jojoba?
This is fine. I'm going to put whatever natural sounding oil it tells me to, I'll do it. I've done that with my hair before, but never on my skin. This is interesting. I'm looking forward to hearing what James has to say about this stuff.
Yeah, I want to find out if it's right to get all oiled up.
Let's find out then.
James, welcome to The Upgrade.
Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So In the opening of your book, you explained that you stopped showering 5 years ago. I'm sure this is a topic you're now tired of talking about, but you're going to have to explain it to us as well.
No, that's fine. It's a logical place to start. I hope that the book is about a lot more than me and my habits, but that was an entry point for my curiosity, at least. I kind of just gradually started doing less and less of everything, shampoo, washing my face, body wash, deodorant. And then, you know, I got to the point I was doing almost nothing. And then for experimental purposes, went ahead and went to absolutely nothing for a while. And now I just don't use any products, but I use just water only. And I'm still pretty minimalist about that. And yeah, the intro to the book is sort of about all the forces that drove me to that sort of experimentation, which I learned once I started writing about it is not exactly super rare. Like, it's rare to go all the way, but a lot of people have eliminated one or many of those products in their lives and feel like they're better off for it.
There's definitely the no poo. I hate that term, but like that sort of idea, like people go off of shampoo and say that their hair is like transformed as a result.
Well, I mean, we're on video, so you can judge for yourself. You know, I mean, it
looks good.
I mean, it looks luxurious.
It's fine. You know, I think when people have really elaborate rituals, like you absolutely can make yourself look and feel and smell better. And if you love doing that, then, you know, I say more power to you. But what I learned through the course of this self-experimentation and talking to people in writing the book is that, you know, there's just a lot more that you can go without if you choose to. And you may not look as good as if you spend a ton of time and money on it, but you know, you can reach a sort of moderate equilibrium where it's like good, fine, good enough. And it kind of involves pushing back against ideas about what's medically necessary or what's actually a healthy practice versus what's just elective. What do we do for fun? And what could we do less of if we chose to?
So what was that process like of kind of weaning yourself off of all of these products? Did you go through any difficult phases or was it seamless?
No, it's not seamless. Not seamless for me, not seamless for anybody I spoke to. It's like training for a marathon, I think, is the way to think about it. You don't go out, you know, if you don't run and then you go out and try to run 26 miles, you are going to say that's simply impossible. The physical human body cannot do that. But if you gradually do it, you know, do a little bit more and a little bit more before you know it, you know, that suddenly becomes much more reasonable as a prospect. And you will go through phases where you smell bad or you feel gross and oily. And so, you know, you can slow down. It kind of, people shorten their showers, people shorten their baths. They do it less frequently. They use less product. They use cooler water. All these things sort of, you know, if you want to do that over the course of 5 years, you'll barely notice the change. If you want to do it over the course of a week, you're going to feel like a total mess for a long time. So it kind of depends what your goal is. But yeah, and I would carry some deodorant with me everywhere I go, you know, in case I never want to offend anyone, you know, and I never want to look really, you know, unprofessional or disrespectful, but I certainly didn't look my best, I would say.
And a lot of this has to do with the skin microbiome. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, that was what kind of piqued my interest in thinking this might be possible. Is this still emerging science of the skin microbiome, which is very similar to the gut microbiome, you know, that we have trillions of microbes living all over us, similar to how we have them in our guts. And they're not causing problems. They're, you know, if the coronavirus is among them, yes, it's definitely causing problems and you want to get it off. But most of them are, they're normal. It is an ecosystem that is essentially part of who we are. And so the best you can do is hope to optimize it so that, you know, it's working in your favor. You are never sterile. You're never without these microbes. And that's the question that, you know, is kind of changing the face of dermatology and skincare industry right now is kind of, what do you mean make the microbiome better? What are you supposed to do with this fact? But what we do know is that it's not the correct approach to just try to kill them all the time, get rid of them all the time. And that is, the idea is that doing that is what gets you in the cycle of where you do that one morning. And then by the next morning, if you don't do it again, you're populated by some really funky microbes that make you smell bad and you look oily. And like, we did not evolve to become like repulsive to other human beings if we didn't every 24 hours go through some elaborate cleaning ritual, right? So it seems like what we're doing is a bunch of real short-term fixes instead of thinking about how do you, in the longer term, create a healthier biome that is working for you, which is not to say that you would never smell bad or, you know, like that your skin would never break out or you wouldn't have ever have eczema flares, but that you might overall have fewer.
Have we always known about the skin microbiome? Is that a relatively recent discovery, for lack of a better term? I mean, I know the gut microbiome has been sort of like recently become more well known and people talk about it more. And I haven't heard much about the skin microbiome.
Yeah, it is. Both of those microbiomes came into common scientific parlance with the DNA sequencing technology that came about 10 years ago. And, you know, we knew that there were microbes all over us, which weren't, you know, causing infections, but we didn't know the scope of it. So just like in the gut, we knew there were microbes inside of us. We didn't know that that we are more microbe than human in terms of number of cells. And we did not know that there were so many microbes all over us all the time. And so it's really a matter of scope and scale that has changed things. We've been really quick to embrace the gut microbiome, and that is by far the majority of where our microbes are. And that has changed people's thinking about things like probiotics and antibiotic overuse, which just in the last 10 years, if you ask people to kind of think about taking supplements or drinking kombucha or thinking about foods that would help them foster bacteria in their guts, you know, that seemed like kind of really out there nonsense. And it's really mainstream now. And the skin microbiome has been slower to be capitalized upon, but there is a big movement in the industry, both the kind of indie skincare industry and mainstream Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson companies to start marketing around that. At least there was right up until the pandemic. So I don't know how that'll change things, but the idea of products that, if not exactly probiotic, are supposed to be helping you have a healthy skin microbiome is at least really interesting in terms of the implications for how we think about what it means to be clean. And it really, you know, it's the marketing and advertising that will drive that concept into mainstream consciousness.
You talk about mites on the skin, and whenever people hear that, that probably makes their skin crawl and they want to go take a shower like that. Just I picture tardigrades. That's what I have in my head when I think of microscopic things crawling. What do they do? What do these mites do?
Yeah, that's the really interesting thing is we don't quite know. We do know that when you swab the faces of humans, we all have mite DNA on our skin. So we thought it was maybe this more rare thing where occasionally people would have some mites living in their pores in their skin. But once you can look for the evidence of them, you know, they're all around, which means that's basically as close as you can get to, you know, normal when 100% of people have something, even though, yeah, like you say, the initial instinct, there's this visceral reaction to like, get these off of me. I would immediately buy a product that would promise to rid me of them. So the best hypotheses are maybe that they are, you know, kind of helping feed on dead skin cells, that they are feeding on the oils. You know, we don't exactly know, but there's good reason to think that just like we don't know what most of the microbes on our skin are doing, but at least that you might think, okay, well, I don't want to try to get them off is the important idea. And it also doesn't mean you want more of them or you want like that any kind of, you know, microscopic thing is going to be desirable. So yeah, I wish I could tell you, I hope we know more about this soon.
Jordan, leave the mites alone.
I want them off of me.
You're an ecosystem, embrace it. So James, you talked about how once you stopped showering, you felt like, I'm paraphrasing, you had a better relationship with your skin, like your skin was kind of talking to you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you become more attuned to the ways that your skin, that your body odor change with regard to lifestyle. So I think most people have had the experience of being really stressed out, not sleeping well, not eating, and they break out or they feel like their skin doesn't look that good or they're, you know, just not themselves and they can see it. And people will say, you know, you look tired. Like we can sense this in other people, even if it is relatively subtle, like short-term changes. And the cultural approach that is usually topical, whether or not it's makeup or just taking a shower, washing yourself, like trying to adorn yourself in other ways. And a lot of times that's necessary because we can't, like, or we feel that we can't actually take more time to address the causes of that. But when you were without those options, you know, you notice it more subtly and more quickly that you're just kind of not looking or feeling your best. And, you know, it's very problematic to kind of suggest that that's the appropriate response, but that at least is a little bit more of a barometer and a reminder that in an ideal world, you know, your skin is not some separate thing. It is an organ that is our best barometer, our best gauge of our acute status that we can see, short of like drawing blood and getting other metrics. You know, like we aren't normally so attuned to it because there is so much artificial in our day-to-day self-care and hygiene regimens.
Hi, I'm Danielle Belton, editor-in-chief of The Root.
And I'm Maisha Kai, managing editor of The Glow Up.
And this September, we're excited to bring you The Root Presents It's Lit.
It's Lit is a podcast where we talk about all things literature, literally.
More specifically, Black literature.
And we have some incredible guests lined up, including Nicole Hannah-Jones.
The last thing I want is us to produce anything like the Green Book.
Ijoma Alu.
Why this book? You know, why aren't we all picking up the How to Burn Down the System book? You know, like, why can't we do that right now?
The venerable Claudia Rankine.
I can't really separate the subject out from the structure. And the two things for me are actually what makes writing exciting.
And so many more brilliant Black authors, writers, and thought leaders.
We're speaking with some of the most distinguished voices in Black literature about their work, the books that influence them, and a lot more.
So please join us every Friday for some thought-provoking conversations. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep it lit.
Whoop, whoop.
You mentioned Johnson & Johnson and Procter & Gamble. I would love to hear more about what popular marketing myths we've all just sort of accepted and have come to believe about skincare products and their necessity. What are some sort of common things that have inundated the culture and how we perceive proper skincare, and how are they right or wrong?
That's a more difficult question than it would seem, but there's a sort of an idea of necessity, of virtue, of morality to using certain products, to general cleanliness, which actually stems from real classism and wealth disparities that developed around the basic access to soap and water, soap and running water, that developed after the Industrial Revolution. Then the people who were selling soap found ways to create need to further segment that product. When, you know, you have a soap like Dr. Bronner's, which says right on the label, this is 18-in-1. You can use it for your body, for your hair, for your hands, for your dog, for your laundry, for your dishes, for brushing your teeth. Soap is fundamentally a very similar compound. We can tweak these products by adding certain fragrances and colors and different concentrations. So you might have a slight preference here, but the idea that you need a different product for all these things, and actually that everyone in your family needs a different product, and then you need many different soaps and detergents for different parts of your body. I think that's the fundamental idea. And, you know, if you have a preference, great. If you don't, you know, like, this really makes a difference to you between these different kinds of soaps. But I think a lot of people think, like, the idea of using shampoo to clean your clothes or something is just like mind-blowing, when in fact they're almost an identical product.
I feel really smart now because I use shampoo to clean my clothes kind of a lot.
It might not be the most economical thing, but, you know, soaps and detergents are at a chemical level just very really like it's a basic compound that we've been sold in like a million different forms. And it's sold in pharmacies in ways that imbue it with an idea that it's medicinal and that you need to get some very specific kind for a very specific use, when in fact, we could be a lot more flexible and probably save a lot of money and worry in the process.
Although I have used Dr. Bronner's on my hair while camping, and it was not a pleasant experience. It really, like, it's a,
I know,
it's a harsh thing.
Like, it's intense, you. But you know what? It's,
yeah.
It's like, that's a matter of concentration, right? That you can dilute anything. We're just not used to having soaps that are that pure. I mean, that's a pure soap. And when you get it's a brilliant move, honestly, to sell shampoos, which are basically watered down or that are like made to be less harsh because they're mixed with emollients, things that are basically working against the soap. So it furthers to the point that like maybe we just need to wash our hair less. I mean, we really actually, we started with Dove and with other products to actually make soaps less pure purposefully. And that was, you know, it's kind of like the equivalent of selling like light beer, watered down Gatorade or something. Like,
right.
Maybe you could have just had less Gatorade or have one beer instead of three light beers. I don't know. Like, but it's great. It's great for the seller and it doesn't quite make so much sense for the consumer.
So given your sort of skepticism about the products, the kind of corporate aspect of all of this, I'm wondering what your opinion is of these kind of Johnson & Johnson, all these companies trying to kind of capitalize on the idea of the skin microbiome now. And I've seen products like that with probiotics in them and stuff like that. Like, sounds like a marketing gimmick.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting about it, right? Is because there is real interesting science. You know, the microbiome is real. It clearly affects our health and the day-to-day functioning of our skin. And yet we don't know really what to do about it. We don't think it's not easy to change in terms of getting a new type of bacteria to stay and stick around. It'll stay for a little while. And we don't know how universal different approaches will be. So like what's good for my microbiome might not be good for yours, or might not, you know, what helps my skin might not help yours. That's kind of a universal experience in the skincare world, is like something some people love a product that other people say is complete nonsense. So yeah, they're definitely selling products that promise to help or optimize the skin microbiome is definitely putting the cart before the horse. And I hope one day that such things will be, you know, proven to work. There are companies that are going through clinical trials to actually see if they can help acne and eczema. And I think that's kind of the appropriate best approach. I wouldn't invest in anything now, but you know, I initially had this hope that it was going to upend a lot of conceptions about cleanliness and we could all kind of just chill a little bit on our daily cleaning rituals, you know, save some water and some time and some plastic bottles and some money. And instead, I see these companies moving in the same direction as they did with, you know, shampoo and conditioner, body wash and moisturizer, which is to continue to sell you just two products that are kind of working against each other. And so we'll have antibacterial soaps and probiotic sprays. And it's just like, maybe the answer was to just use less of the antibacterial soap.
I don't have to shower all the time because I am elderly, but I have a teenager at home who is a teenager, and I don't want to say anything about him, but he has to shower.
Air out his business, Alice.
He's just a filthy, you know, just, and he's a teenager. He's got like hormones just going crazy, and he has to shower like every day. Is it possible he's overdoing it? Like, is that part of the kind of reactivity of his body? Is this specific to teenagers? What's going on?
Yeah. I don't want to overstep. It's certainly possible. I can say,
let me get him on the phone.
I can say from my own self, you know, I went through the typical teenage phase. I had bad acne. I was a swimmer, so I was, you know, immersed in chlorine, which was drying out my skin like 3 hours a day. And then I was washing my face like really aggressively 3 times a day. And this was not doing it, you know, this was not helping it. And I think it is pretty clear that we have not made progress on the front of, you know, speaking specifically to teenage acne, that this is not a problem we have solved. And that, so I think there's good reason to think that, as counterintuitive as it might be to think like maybe we need to, if we could get a different microbial ecosystem and actually add something to the teenage biome, that we might make it more palatable to ourselves, but like we do, there clearly are hormonal changes that increase sebum during that time, which change your microbiome, which seem to often incline, like your microbes are feeding on that oil, your microbial populations are changing, and then they're producing odors that we find offensive. It seems obvious and necessary to wash all that off, but the more aggressively you do it, the quicker it comes back, and what comes back is even less desirable. So I don't know exactly the answer, but I'm hopeful that we can have more sustainable things where you don't have to be quite so aggressive as a youth.
How should we look at the relationship between cleanliness and health? You know, like I imagine that when people think of not showering for a long period of time, they imagine themselves, you know, the same way if you didn't wash your hands, you would have germs on your hands, you would ingest those germs, it would make you sick. Like not showering is, you know, 1 or 2 degrees removed from poor health. What's the relationship in reality between cleanliness and someone's internal health?
That's where you really get into marketing ideas, right? So we know that hand washing is tied to health. That's a hygiene practice, as opposed to an elective cosmetic or cleanliness habit, which is tied more to social ritual, social expectations, personal preferences, which is not to say those aren't important, but they don't lead to transmission of disease. So we tend to have, you know, if you are carrying around, not to get too graphic, but blood, feces, vomit, or if you have indications of those things, or if you're actively coughing, you're spewing things out, we tend to have a visceral reaction to say, like, get that person away from me. I don't want to become infected by that. That feels gross. It feels wrong. And so any you know, practices that minimize spread of disease are not to be questioned. When you talk about washing, you know, washing your arms, about applying deodorant, about whitening your teeth, like you're really talking about signifiers of social status, class, and personal preference, and they're not tied to health. There is something I get into more in the book, and I guess just at least allude to here, is the hygiene hypothesis that because we think it is necessary to, say, wash your hair, if you get the oils off your hair, that you might somehow be a healthier person. That's this really interesting idea that's very tied up and complex, problematic lessons from history and marketing, but that when we think just doing more is better, we have in some cases overdone it and let ourselves to become isolated and our immune systems to become hyper reactive. And, you know, our lifestyles have played a part in the overwhelming rates of allergies and autoimmune conditions that we're seeing now, because we are living mostly indoors, removed from biodiversity, and on top of that, feel that it's necessary to kind of, if there is any dirt on us anywhere, to immediately eradicate ourselves off of it, because of bizarre ideas about what it means to be healthy.
Is there a specific marketing campaign that you can point to that, like, you know, over the years completely ruined us, just like wrecked our perception of a specific skincare feature or function to sell products that, you know, people might be familiar with or unfamiliar with?
You know, if anything, what's fascinating about it is that there were so many, and the industry competed with itself by saying that the other products were ruining you or were toxic to your skin. That, you know, I guess the kind of like the concept of body odor is a marketing term in itself. And I think that's kind of an important one. I'm forgetting who is credited with coining the term, but it became an idea that kind of prior to the marketing of products around smell, around odor, and the marketing specifically of deodorant products, which is really only kind of in the second half of the 20th century, there was an idea, you know, people smell, like we smell in certain ways. We're not meant to smell like cool ocean mist breeze or lilac or whatever. I mean, you can if you want to, but it started with this idea of body odor. Okay, there's this one actual sort of medical problem that people have and they need this product in order to get rid of it. And I think it's gotten to a point where in most places, if you can smell a person at all, it's considered offensive or considered that they're unhygienic or that there must be something wrong with that. And we've gotten much more sensitive to that, such that we kind of have taken olfactory senses out of most human relationships. We all just kind of go around smelling like nothing or smelling like fake scents that we've applied to ourselves. And except for, you know, maybe intimate relationships, we don't really have that sense associated with other human interactions. And I could go on and on, but there's reason to believe that it's, you know, the subtle cues and the ways in which we communicate. You know, we notice when we're talking over Zoom, it's just not the same. You just don't quite get a feel of someone. And it's not to say we're like going around smelling each other, you know, like dogs, but that there's a lot of subtlety in all of our gestures and all of our facial expressions in the chemistry that we give off from our skin. And that's one thing that's missing in modern life.
I definitely have had the experience of like dating somebody and it was like, they have body odor, but they just didn't smell right. Like there was just something. Yeah. I was like, no, you're just not, no, go away now. I mean, just like a weird thing.
Right. But it's not this binary that I think people have, right. That you either smell, you know, like rotten onions and garbage, or you smell like nothing because you put on your deodorant, and we are missing some things by all that gray area in between where you're like, oh yeah, I know that person's smell.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like that.
But it's not offensive. That, and, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of pheromones or whatever, you know, that kind of reaction you get to somebody when you're like, they're, it just seems, yeah.
Yeah. We're constantly giving off all kinds of chemical signals and we don't know, just like the biome, we don't know exactly what to make of them, but they were serving some sort of purpose in our interpersonal lives prior to the last century.
Are there any other ways we can protect our skin microbiome beyond just sort of, you know, cutting down on washing? Is there anything, I mean, we can add or eat or?
That was my logical conclusion to it, is I don't know. I don't think the answer is going to be more products. I think the answer is going to be cutting down on products, at least that if products aren't bringing you, you know, real pleasure to use, you know, like lots of people love their skincare routines. They really enjoy smelling like a certain product. And I say, that's great, you know, but if you were on the fence or you were doing something just because you thought it was necessary, you thought it was healthy, you know, try going without it. And maybe that might be a benefit. You know, I think the recurring message in the book is that skin health and appearance we need to think about it more from the inside out. So eating well, sleeping well, taking care of yourself in other ways, de-stressing, having healthy social relationships. These things are all easier said than done, but that if there were one, like the one optimal way to think about improving your skin is to think about improving everything, and it all goes together. So it's yet another reminder of those things being important to us.
Well, thank you so much, James. This was great.
That's really, really interesting stuff. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, Brian, did you know the world sucks right now?
You know, I'd kind of noticed that because, yeah, every day I wake up, I'm like, is this really real life? I would say yes, it sucks.
Yeah. There's a lot of sucky things in the world right now, and we're started a new podcast that's going to fix it.
So I guess we should probably introduce ourselves. My name is Brian Kahn. I'm the managing editor at Earther.
And I'm Alex Kranz, the senior consumer tech editor at Gizmodo.
And we're here to tell you about a new podcast that we're doing at Gizmodo focused on...
everything! Fixing it! Making it better! Making the world suck a little less. It's called System Reboot. And we're covering a lot of important stuff that we think is really worth hearing and learning about.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of systemic failures across the country and around the world that, you know, the pandemic has really highlighted them, but they've been there all along. And we thought, you know, there has to be a better way to do things.
There has to be, from the disastrous food supply chain issues we witnessed really early on in the pandemic to the absolutely shoddy internet that we also saw early on and are seeing a lot more of right now as everybody returns to school. We're going to be diving into the systems that are failing us across the board.
And more importantly than examining the things that are failing, we're actually going to talk about what we can do to fix them. That's the whole system reboot idea.
Yeah, positivity, man.
Yeah, it's kind of novel. We're going to try this out and see how it goes. But, you know, what we're going to be doing is talking to experts who've spent a lot of time researching these issues and coming up with solutions.
So, if you don't want to believe that the world is going to end in 2020 and you want to hold on to just a little bit of hope, please check us out.
And join us on our quest to fix what's broken.
time for Upgrade of the Week, where we talk about that one thing that's making a big difference in our lives. Alice, what's your upgrade this week?
You know, Jordan, I don't have an upgrade this week. And I think we need to talk about the big old elephant in the room, which is the election. We are taping this exactly a week before election night. It is, as people listen to this, about, you know, a day before the election. And I am panicking about what I'm going to do election night, how I'm going to get through. I need ideas.
Valid concern.
Jordan,
valid,
it's all up to you.
Valid concern. Well,
help
I will
me.
Tell
Upgrade
you,
my election night.
I will tell you and our tens of thousands of listeners what I'm doing on election night, which is getting the fuck out of here. And by getting the fuck out of here, I mean New York specifically. I will not be in my apartment. I will not be in the city. I am going to try, if things work out as planned, my election night and like the weekend through election night will be spent in upstate New York, sort of disconnected to the extent possible. One sort of, well, actually, this will relate to election night and sort of a techie upgrade. Have you heard of the app Freedom?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay.
Sure.
We might have talked about this before on the upgrade, but I'll probably be using Freedom to just make sure that I'm disconnected from the internet and from Twitter and everything else for a good stretch leading up to the election. I think one of my biggest and probably everyone's biggest sources of anxiety is that lead up to the point of you know, having some type of understanding of what the outcome is going to be. And one, that's completely useless because that anxiety leading up to it isn't going to change anything. Like refreshing my Twitter feed every 2 seconds isn't going to give me anything besides, you know, more people saying this is the terrible outcome that could happen and these are all the awful things that could result from the election. So that's one thing. The other thing is we're not going to have probably a definitive answer this year the same way that we've had in elections past. So if we're looking at this where election results aren't really going to be solidified until the end of November, then treating election night on November 3rd as if it's a normal election is sort of an exercise of futility and anxiety. So between those two ideas bouncing around in my head, I'm just going to get away for a while and try to forget that election night is happening. I'll check in every now and then because I am, you know, a masochist. So I have to know a little bit, but I probably won't be as connected as normal. And that's going to be my way of alleviating a lot of the stress that I would otherwise have if I were in New York and in my own apartment and refreshing Twitter the way that I would be normally.
That sounds healthy. For people who don't know, so Freedom is an app that turns off your social media sites off of your computer.
Yeah.
And also your phone? Can you use it on your phone also?
I believe you can use it on your phone also. I haven't tried using it on my phone, but yeah, basically it can disconnect your phone or your device from the internet for a certain period of time. It's really useful for people when they're trying to get a certain amount of work done or if they're trying to do some writing or whatever. If you need to do some heads down work for 2 hours, you can set the Freedom timer for 2 hours and have it cut you off from the outside world for that amount of time. You could still use Microsoft Word. You could still use, you know, things that aren't web-based, but it'll keep you from just instinctually opening new tabs and instinctually checking Twitter or instinctually checking Instagram or whatever it is that your sort of internet habit is. Your internet will be disconnected for that and you won't be able to turn it back on until that time period is up. So that's going to be my plan. And if anyone wants to try out Freedom, there's a lot of apps like it, Freedom and different alternatives that can just keep you from doing those sort of internet habit glitches that so many different sites and apps have trained our brains to do. So if you need sort of a forced removal from those things, there's obviously an app for that.
Wow. I can't imagine being able to log off that night, even though I know there's not going to be results. I'm just going to be, it's going to be rough.
How are you going to handle it, Alice?
What's your
election night strategy / upgrade?
The plan I'm starting to form is a series of long walks.
I like this.
I'm looking into some things like edibles because I think it's time. I think it's time. Obviously, like a glass of wine is going to help. 2 glasses of wine historically for me has not helped. Mm-hmm. So it's just it could go real bad, get real sloppy. So I'm not going to do that. I am just really, I mean, I'm already like at the point now where I got to tell you, my anxiety is just ridiculous. I'm like,
are you staying in the city?
Oh yeah. Staying in the city. I mean, my son is, you know, at school, if whatever, right. Like, we're going to be here, but
where do you go walking then? Like I recall election night 2016 and the rainy mood of the city and just that like it would not be the escape that you would mm-hmm. want it to be, I imagine, mm-hmm. going out for mm-hmm. a walk, unless you had a place that or a route that felt, you know, more remote and detached from the city. Like that's part of my goal in getting out of the city is just like not, I think everything around me that's familiar would remind me of what's going on in the world. And I'm trying to separate myself from that. I think edibles might help doing that for you.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I just go full Michael Pollan and take some LSD. I've never done it before. Now's my time.
Maybe this is the time.
I don't know.
Find a deeper truth.
So I can get deep into the, you know, primeval forest in the center of the park and maybe escape from reality there. Or I just exhaust myself with like miles long walking throughout the day. That's not going to work. I have really yet to hit upon the perfect plan, but I got to come up with something. I am looking at a site called, hang on a second, I will find it. Nope, it's on my phone, so I can't look at it. It's about how to stop a coup. So it's like a plan. So I'm doing a call tonight that helps you like kind of, you know, organize and talk through what you're going to do if there is a coup. So that feels a little more productive. I am taking a lot of CBD oil. I'm just spending a lot of money on CBD oil. So that's helping somewhat. I got my old pal Klonopin also in the works, in the shadows.
Okay, so it sounds like you've got a whole like Batman tool belt of medicinal supports.
I don't know if this is the right way to go about it, but I gotta do something.
Hey, I don't think there's a right or wrong way. There's just our various ways of handling the situation as best we can. Let me ask you, are you going to be in frequent communication with friends in times like this, or is this something where you basically cut yourself off and it's just, you know,
I'm a texter. I will text all my friends, and I'm actually thinking as we're talking, this might be a good plan to put together a Slack channel mm-hmm. for all of us to convene.
Yeah.
Instead of Twitter.
Concentrate.
You, of course, won't be there.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll hopefully, if you see me on there, like Jordan, you're not supposed to be here. Go back to the woods.
Go back. I'll be in the forest.
But yeah, I think for when and if I am online, I would like all of my political content to be concentrated to specific places. So obviously Twitter is going to be all political. And if there were a Slack channel that was all political, great. That would keep it from bleeding into all of the other areas of my life. What I don't want, and what's, I mean, inevitably going to happen, I think it's pretty unavoidable. But what I don't want is for every facet of my life to be inundated with what's going on in politics. Like there has to be some type of reprieve from that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. If I'm playing video mm-hmm. games and people are talking about the election when I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima, like I don't want that, right? I don't want it to be in every part of my life, even my escapism. So that's a worry. I don't know if there's any way to avoid it, but maybe having designated Slack channels and sort of designated group chats and places to go where you're going to vent about that stuff, or people that you're going to, that you plan on speaking with, maybe that will help so that when you need to step away and you need to have a sense of, you know, this is going to be reality, hopefully, or an escape separate from the political world, you can find mm-hmm. a little oasis psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But having an outlet that's not overly toxic is the key for me anyway, because I need, I'm going to need to check in with somebody, but Twitter is just a cesspool. I can't. I know I'm going to look at it. But
Twitter's always a cesspool. Yeah. Yep. I'm going to try to keep myself away for at least some of the lead up to it.
All right.
And we'll see how it goes.
All right.
Listeners, 1 week later, if there's not an episode, you know that it didn't go well for us. I'm still wandering the woods, maybe. Who knows?
Suddenly the sound quality will be much, much worse.
In the meantime, most of you have already voted in places that already offered early voting, or you sent in your mail-in ballots. If you haven't yet, make sure that you vote tomorrow. Make sure you vote on November 3rd, and we'll see you on the other side of this election.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Brad Fisher.
Please rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and you can leave us a review too. We love hearing from you guys, and we also love reading 5 stars and reading what you have to share about the show. You can also reach us by calling at 347-687-8109 and leaving us a voicemail, or you can write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at Lifehacker, on Instagram at lifehacker.com, all one word, and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.